effect of race on urban development. Not particularly racism, but just race and race relations. You know, taking a look at Atlanta particularly. And of course, you were very involved in urban renewal, so I was curious about, you know, that. Let me start with this. Can you tell me the years that you were chairman of the Citizens Advisory Committee?
I'd have to work back on that. Let's see, it was while Hartsfield was mayor. And of course, you had, 2 years of Andy, 8 years of Maynard, 8 years of Allen. So it has to be, say, 20 years ago, I guess, about 54. Yeah. I can look that up if you need it.
One of the things I was interested in, I was curious how extensive was the practice of creating buffer zones between the races. Buffer zones with public housing, commercial development, highways, renewal.
They were very prevalent. Zoning was the major use of zoning, and the zone was stripped of industrial use. And they were obvious that there was nothing to do for that. The big drive was to get the land to be used by the blacks to build on. It wasn't. That was a progressive. The creation of those buffers was a progressive move rather than a retrogressive move. Well, in that the city, knowing that more areas had to be found for blacks to live in, we're using these buffers to create areas for blacks to live in rather than being knowing exactly how to put this into words, but if the city under Hartsfield and under Allen was on the side of getting the black areas to live in here. And they used these statements to create it. Rather than protecting the whites, they were saying, okay, whites, you're going to put this buffer here so you can object to the blacks being on the other side of it. That's, you know, Allen got in a lot of trouble when he put up a barrier across Peyton Road. Are you familiar with that?
Yeah.
Hartsfield's comment on that was that he made some mistakes, but he never would have made one you could photograph. And what Allen was doing, and of course the interpretation was this is the most racist thing you could do, but what he was doing, and I believe was a encouragement of black realtors, was to try to gain many acres of land on the other side of that barrier where blacks could build.
Uh-huh.
But of course it got out of differently. And unfortunately it was just about the time the Berlin Wall went up. He was in trouble, and he just waited around for a suit that was later most of it.
So really, he was trying, I guess, to make the whites feel safe in that area. What do you think the effect on the city was of these barriers in terms of how the city grew and developed?
Well, what it created was sort of a river running through the city from slightly northwest to slightly southeast.
Mm-hmm.
The charts of where the blacks lived in these days is very much confined to that area. Incidentally, there's a man, I think he's still around, I haven't seen him in years, T.B. Williams. He was on my original committee and was city council and a real tall. And he has endowed a different views of a lot of it.
Yeah.
He feels like he did it by buying up, I don't know, 400 acres and so on. He's the one that
Yeah. I want to interview some people in the black community too.
What do you want to do too?
Yeah, I'll get up to him. How about the place in the pilots? Is that done also just the purpose of news?
To some extent, but I don't think that was... There were so many other factors. The black neighborhoods were a bad game. I mean, they were usually on the highways because the land prices were cheap. I think that after the highways went in, they probably were divider, but I don't think we were really set up with that in mind, because I-75, I-85, and pretty Buttonhill Bottom on this side, and of course it was cleared by urban renewal, but it was that was one of the worst slums in the city of Buttonhill Bottom. I may be wrong, but I think at the time that was done, the basic layout by Lockman, right at the war, he was called in. I couldn't figure and tell you how close to the actual highway station was to his plan. But it was done from a plan of viewpoint of what ought to be done to save the city. And it was before the blacks were very much on the conscience. That's the plan. I mean, they lived over there somewhere. Just a few blocks from now. Another man, and he's retired, but his name is Phil Hammer.
Oh, yeah.
And I know that he was head of Metropolitan Atlanta Planning Commission for a while. And I know he had some scheme of using roads to more or less isolate an area out near West Texas Ferry. And I said goodbye. But again, to protect the blacks and give them a place to live rather than trying to run them out.
Mm-hmm.
And when the draft of that got out, it raised all sorts of hell, and I think they changed it in the final statement. It didn't raise hell with the blacks, it raised hell with the whites.
But the blacks were getting more land.
Yeah. Well, it was a very liberal involved with racial matters with white thought it wasn't too good a thing to do with more house. The thing is that in looking at all this, you have to see the motives of the people who are involved. If you just look at it as a this happened, it could be interpreted, well, here was a white community that was doing everything we could to block and contain black expansion. Whereas what was really going on was, and the truth of the matter was, that integration of living patterns was just not going to happen at that time. And the only approach, the liberal approach, if you will, was to find land that the blacks could build. Even public housing was black. Public housing.
That's why I don't feel that racism is really the operative motive here. Simply, that's why I want to put
it. Well, it was the operative motive in terms of how to deal with the existence of it. I mean, without that, a lot of things that happen wouldn't happen in the housing side. But it was taking the point at which race relations then existed and seeing what you could do to alleviate the serious problem of slums and bad housing. This was as far as anybody could hope to go in this. And that's I got very much entangled with race and housing in terms of relocation of people that were moved from the old mill area. Which was very volatile, very tough business to find areas where you could relocate. And Atlanta took that seriously, and I think there were about 4,500 people that relocated and went to either more than 221 houses or public houses.
Okay, on the relocation, was there an attitude that in order to get the blacks out of the downtown area, which we knew was going to do, was there the attitude that some white neighborhoods were expendable?
Well, there was, yeah, I would say so, or maybe not expendable, but the poorer white neighborhood was certainly more subject to redevelopment. That's true. Relocation housing. And that part of that was land barrier, part of it was like a political cloud.
Was it accepted by city government? In other words, that some areas would undergo transition, and that would not end.
Yeah. That was a big effort at one point to pull some areas in transition.
Mm-hmm.
And there was one in particular, what we call Adamsville. Mm-hmm. And I worked with my family for a while, and they were very proud of what they were doing. I think that Atlanta has stayed in the same racial ratio it was in, which is about 1/3, 2/3, 1/3 black. But you might have eventually developed in a way of housing. But I think the growth of the black population and the out-migration of whites, which I've never been sure it's been, key to the tremendous growth of what has been in migration.
Yeah.
I don't think there were that many people around to leave Atlanta. But as the blacks began to really be the majority in the city, and I think the black realtors got involved too, and it was much easier for them to go in and change the neighborhood and use scare tactics and so forth and so on. And the whites left. And I get the feeling now that the blacks really don't care too much. But they, I know this sounds like an old sort of myth, but I really do think that the better educated blacks, and this wasn't the way I hoped it would work out, but I think they just leave and stay where in their part of the city where they're living, where they've got their friends, and where their housing is open, many cases and so on. A few have moved out into the Northwest, and I was part of a movement to try to get them to come out there. And there's very few exceptions. They just hadn't overcome. And I felt the solution to the school problem was busing. I thought it was housing. But you see that with all, I mean, I'm Jewish, of course, and I concentrate on Jews, and I say we can form stay together.
Yeah, that's true of any ethnic group in the history.
And I think the blacks wanted integration when they were a minority. But now they've become a majority and have political control. I don't think that's at the top of their agenda. I think it's exploring the fair treatment and improvement and the ability to go anywhere they want. And they do have that now. But I don't think it's the drive to come out and live on Valley Road is very strong. Well, that's my statement. I mean, somebody who fights my face on that.
Perhaps I, I was under the grade why most of the public housing is placed on the west side, and nothing on the north side at all. Is that a pretty much set government policy?
No, when you say government policy, you got to look at two or three levels. You got to look at the mayor. I get somewhat hazy, you know. I stayed on out of the heading of the housing committee under Adam Allen. So some of what I'm saying, I realize I'm not sure whether it happened around the urban renewal or it happened not the other place. But what was the question?
Why was most of public housing put on the west side, and was that a government policy?
Well, it was not government policy in the executive branch, and it was certainly not a government policy in our committee. Our committee was all a quasi-government. And I don't know whether you know the structure of it. Come back to that.
Yeah.
But the west side, it was just easier to find the land. It was easier to get the acceptance of it. One of the interesting things we ran into was where we had a community of these 2.1 houses. And we wanted to put public housing in that area. And the people in the 2.1 houses were the most vociferous opposers. So we want to try in the public housing neighborhood.
It's interesting because they probably were coming out of the same neighborhood anyway, I suppose.
Yeah, probably. The great battle on the east side was for what was called the Eggleston side. And the blacks living in that neighborhood opposed it in the beginning. But they were. The black leaders got them to go and make a bad mistake.
Well,
that was a real watershed, I think, in Atlanta's history, with the news in that area, the struggle to get that rezoned. And I think the reason it was lost was that we were blindsided, so to speak. We didn't think we'd going to run into the opposition that we did. Even so, it was a fireball council, and then the, what do they call them, president council, voted against the rezoning. Everybody that voted against that rezoning was turned out of office. And he said that he was
on that issue.
Blame myself, did you?
Yeah.
I guess you're aware that there were a coalition of the liberal whites and the business community and the blacks.
Yeah, from across there. There seemed to be deep functioning coalitions in the area.
Yeah.
In terms of the Eggleston site, was there a lot of concern with the Atlanta downtown area becoming all black? In other words, the rejection of Eggleston as a site for public housing was related to the concern of the downtown area?
No, I don't think there were. The concern, there were two or three major centers to that opposition. And number one was Dr. Louis Newton, who was pastor of the Baptist Church at Constantine and Highland, and was also very, very active in the George Baptist Hospital. And he was the one that rallied and got pledges from the council members before we were aware of what's happening. to vote against it. He was kind of a guy that burned the members of his church down and fill up to the all and everything. And his background was he was in Atlanta Chamber of Commerce and published books, but was fully with pamphlets. It was really not much about Atlanta. And then I think they had a quarterly newspaper.
And you did too.
It was very potent in politics.
But the rejection of Eggleston, was that just part of the whole attempt to move blacks away from the downtown area into more the west side and the Akron area?
Well, I don't know if that was it. That was already a black area. The hospital. I have to think of the hospital. At the same time that that was being defeated, there were 600 units on Peel Road that made it. There was a very fine man head of the Committee on Urban Renewal named Ham Douglas. You seen this dude?
No, I think that's what he's doing.
He's been there. He was one of the first men on New York people on New York in fact the last one. But the strategy was worked out that we would come into council with both these projects, the one on the east side and the west side. And there were two people that really wanted to do right, a place to do right out there on the council, who voted for gerrymandered, I guess, to get the west side one on in first. Two people on the east side voted for the units on the west. And the tactics were, and Douglas to say, look, those guys did that. Why don't you better get even? I mean, that's the last. But Ham, at the last minute, decided that sort of arm twisting tactic wouldn't work, and he stayed in his seat at the council. He didn't go and talk to a few people. And anyway, he was beaten by this one. But one of the councilmen was very, very sick. In fact, I think he died very shortly thereafter. And he got up off the sick bed to come down. So it was one of the most divisive fights that I ever saw in the city. And the city was most divisive that I ever got involved in. I got all sorts of emotions.
I imagine George Baptist Hospital probably exposed a couple of times at the Edison side.
Well, that's who, this guy. Louis Newton, with his church and his leadership at Georgia Baptist Hospital, the two of those things, opposed it. And that was very poor. They had hired as a lawyer the head of the Atlanta School Board. And there was a lot of talk that he had asked the principals of various schools in the area to get the children to call their parents and say the thing. That was never true. But he wanted to be mayor of Atlanta, and I remember having lunch with him while it was going on. And I said, you know what you're doing? You're in your political career. He said, I'm doing it because it's right. Well, he did not. He was never. I think he was speaking for a few days. Hartsfield dropped the ball too on that other side. He was a great confidence that he had made.
Out of the area.
Well, the poor, blacks, maybe, but I, on my feeling about the city now, and it has been for a number of years, it's given there's more financial than legislation. At least it's in a higher echelon. You get down to poor, follow their boat, widen back. Taking it probably to the point. And I see another thing that often goes is black distrust of the poor blacks distrust of the wealthier blacks. And that's going to be another thing that's going on here that nobody seems to have got a handle on is the influence of the Hispanics
that are out there
in the Caribbean stuff. I think it's going to be such a different city in the turn of the century that as much of a difference in the next 15 years as there has been in the last 25.
Well, I think we're going to have a situation very much like the northern cities, a number of competing groups sort of jockeying the position.
Yeah.
Asians, Spanish, blacks.
You suggest we pass from one brother guy's gotten in the race. And I don't think the blacks are too aware of it.
Not yet.
Would be anything.
I was also wondering whether there was any feeling that there was too much public housing being built and this would attract more blacks into the city.
Well, yeah, there was the problem was as we're seeing is that we build this housing and we're going to have a lot of people coming into Atlanta to use it. But we did some research on that at the time, and as I recall, I think it was an indication of damn little actually of people that came into Atlanta for a house. They came in looking for jobs. And then they look for housing after that, but their jobs were still back in
there. But was there a lot of concern about the racial balance of Atlanta being tipped towards blacks, if more public housing was built, if more neighbors were welcome up to them?
There was concern about the tipping, but I don't think the public housing particularly was focused on that. I think the addressing the public housing was the people who would occupy it would not make good neighbors. So it's interesting in the beginning that the blacks who went into public housing were at the top of their, or near the top of their scale, because there just wasn't any other place for them to live. And it was only later when the blacks did have all things, the black population and the housing got as bad in the sociological sense as the whites.
I directed studies at the University of Home, and it seems the first people into the homes were really black role middle class.
Yeah.
But in the same sense, I guess the first whites in Texas were low middle class, working class people into whites.
I'm not so sure about that, because there were places whites could live. But this, I'm going to have a short memory of it, but this is one of the most different NGO resorts that thing about Atlanta slums that makes a difference from other cities is that we built these slums. So much of slums in other cities, older cities, were good housing.
For quite a while that there was a sort of a standing statement of policy that you knew would not be used for public housing. And then that was reversed, I think about 66 by Mayor Allen.
Yeah.
Yeah. What was the basis of the reversal?
Well, there was the Atlanta Housing Authority at that time was almost in, you know, like something that the Reagan had proposed would happen to the Department of Education, and it was, they may just look it over to be there to shut it down, because he couldn't. But there was a lot of that feeling in the public housing domain. People were there to keep public housing from being built. My own feeling after years of exposure to it is that I think public housing is no longer good. I think that the idea of subsidizing the rent and letting the market go is a much healthier thing, because that these concentrations haven't really fought them. Of course, the landlords aren't part of the slump, but when you've got several generations to grow up in the same atmosphere, I just think sociologically, I'd like to your reaction to it.
It hasn't worked for me, it's pretty clear. And public housing was never meant to be a long-term housing. It's the short-term, get the people back on their feet, and have them move on.
Right.
You know. What were the attitudes of surrounding towns to public housing? I got the impression that it was, you know,
right.
Was it also, was it poor and black? That were the two issues?
Yeah.
Okay. How did they stop it from being built? Called?
Well, they were, through their own housing authorities, we never tried to get outside the city limits. That's what we were wasting time. But we talked to them about how they were putting all the buildings in the city.
Is that part of what turned Atlanta into a majority black city and black suburbs? I mean, the fact that you couldn't place a real...
Well, I think that plus all the other restrictions around black and the still a political power in the black. The blacks got to know at the time of Hartsville that without them, our man, that any sort of a moderate mayor of Atlanta would be heavily turned to them to support them. You know, they wouldn't get elected. Of course, that was also in their own best interest to have a moderate mayor. So it was a two-way street,
yeah. But any attempt to put public housing into Cobb County, I guess, would just be a failure completely.
Oh, yeah. Well, I mean, it's not a moderate.
Yeah. I live out in Chicago, though.
Well, there's a man there that I think had a good view of the region, and that was Barrett.
Oh, yeah.
He did it on the going away party. I'm not sure how to say
how to get to it.
And I always felt he was much superior to his business, and he had to do certain things because of that. Really knew when the best interest of Cobb or McFarland was.
Well, of course, they refused to even give us a chance to vote on Mara.
Yeah.
It's really a... They're taking a 1965-66 vote and projecting it to represent the population here now. And it's just been such a change in just the last 10 years of who's there.
Well, my guess is that if this new old track works as well as I hope it will, but that's going to be a big influence on the mayor and
Carl. I hope so.
Coming in.
I'd like to see Marty out there.
Hmm?
I'd like to see Marty coming out there.
Well, hell, all you got to do is try to drive around out there.
Well, no, I have to face 75 coming in every morning, and I'd love to get on a bus or a train and just relax and come to the How much contact did you have with black leaders during the election?
I had a great deal, and this committee as being a standing committee, we got into other things as well. I like this to be all directed.
Was anything done at all to win the blacks over on these various committees and win them over to what was being done in the job in the mirror?
It really wasn't necessary. They were all very much for it. And I think the reason they were very much for it was because we were really taking seriously the relocation. I can't remember any opposition to the blacks. The wide numbers of council was the biggest settlement block.
Was there anything
all white?
Was there any feeling among the blacks that any effort to disperse blacks around the city would weaken their political power at that time?
I don't know that I ran into that. Of course, at that point, and I've forgotten the ratio, but members of council were elected at large. I think they were all at large. That was brought about in earlier days by the whites who used them as the blind voting. So it really didn't mean a heck of a lot in those days where you lived. You were running for in front of a whole electric.
Right, which would have limited black strength, right?
Yeah, and it didn't matter if the black was here or there. He both counted as much one vote as the other. I've always regretted we went to the war system because I think, race aside, if you get people that are voting on what their neighbors always are saying to them about and what might be good for the old city.
Yeah, it's quite nice to see it. What effort, and your committee was involved in this, what effort you made to deal with the racial transition in neighborhoods?
Well, there was a man particularly, I don't need to know his name, he was in the government with Carter, and then he went on up to Washington with it, even though he was hadn't supported Carter. He lives in Athens he was one of the gutsiest men I ever met in my life. He was hired by the committee, and the city put up the money, but the city wouldn't put him on the payroll because it was too dangerous and controversial as well. And he was on our payroll, and the money came to us. And he'd go out to these neighborhoods and transition and try to bring peace and calm them down and do that. He's an unfriendly leader in Farms. I did it a few times myself, and that's why I know what a really tough situation it was.
Sure.
I was invited from the southeast to appear, and I spoke, and when I got through, some woman came up and said, "Who in the hell asked you to come here? Why the hell are you here?" I said, "Well, you're chairman, are you president?" And he backed off a little bit. I don't know that we changed very few people during that. This particular meeting was a two-street area, they call it. So, and there was a black neighborhood and a white neighborhood. One of the things we did too with these neighborhoods, these new neighborhoods, was to go in there and help them set up civic groups.
Yeah.
And they, we up there with white women's body parts to come in and help them to be inclined to the purpose. So all of this that we were doing was, there was very little for the blacks to object to. I think today when you got more voting, what you're talking about could have been a very serious matter.
Was the goal here to stabilize these neighborhoods, or to keep them all right, or to let blacks in? You know, what were you aiming for to do that?
Well, basically, we were aiming for decent places for people to live.
Integrated? Maybe?
No, because it just it wasn't going to happen.
So you were looking for a smooth transition there from white to black?
Yeah. All for a white neighborhood, not to object to a black neighborhood coming in next door.
Yeah.
That was school for a problem. And as I said, there was also this feeling among the federal blacks that they didn't want to keep it. They wouldn't have wanted the White House.
That's why I'm getting the feeling that some neighborhoods were, in a sense, expendable, because if you're going to relocate blacks from the Kansas City area out to the west side and out to the south, west area.
That's true.
Then you're going to have to at some point say that some white neighborhoods are going to give. And that's why I had the feeling that when it became politically more acceptable to let some of the poorer white neighbors go, or go into a black area to come back, then to build public housing in Kansas City.
Well, that's true, but the other factor involved in that was land question. Of course, these 221 units, you had to get FHA approval too, and they were another factor. And I'm sure race had played a part in what they were doing.
I'm going to take a look at some of the federal records you have. Just sort of the final point, because I don't want to keep it too long. Are there any records of the Citizens Advisory Committee or the Housing Resources Committee?
I may have some old files. There's a guy, there was a man named Malcolm Jones.
Mm-hmm.
He was a retired Army colonel. And he was at City Hall, and he was, my staff, I had called on him in this circumstance. And then I had a director, and I must say another guy very good. And I had a secretary. And I had a little office outside of my office. One thing we did, we withdrew from doing any work in those areas while I had the job. And we already had the Eggleston public housing and withdrew from it for a certain part of that. There was a sacrifice, but from my own viewpoint, I found it rewarding and exciting and enjoyable.
Well, I think you did a lot for the city, didn't you?
Well, I hope so. I tell you, sometimes I wonder, it didn't quite turn out the way I had hoped it was by quite the relationship. I guess I was expecting a black flag differently from my wife.
But it would be possible to see some of the records you still have?
Yeah, but I was also thinking if you could get hold of Malcolm Jones, he may have kept them too.
He's still living in the country?
Yeah, he lives on Mount Town. He's an old man now. There's a book. I'll see if I can find it. I got really upset that he was the author of it, because he told me he wasn't going to name names, and he did. I don't care anymore, but I did care. And he union council for the labor from fighting.
That's the one by Stone.
He's from North Carolina.
Yeah.
It's a green book.
It might be the traditional one. Economic growth and labor discontent. System bias.
I don't think so.
Well, he doesn't name that many names, actually, but if he goes over that whole Edison controversy, and apparently he interviewed quite a few people. That one goes all over Atlanta every year. I don't know if that person is associated with that. About the committee. And he speaks, he says, the chairman of the Citizen Advisory Committee, but he wasn't actually there anymore.
Maybe I look at where he puts everybody in attributive influential.
Yeah, that's the one. Yeah. I'm going to take a look at this book sometime. So that's good.
Yeah.
Good study.
Yeah.
Okay, could I contact you after the New Year and
sure.
Okay, are the records kept at your office and at the Equity Museum? Okay, let me get in touch with you again then after the New Year, and I'll come down and spend a day or two with you about it. Okay, thank
trying to find a place where we could have lunch, black and white food, and all it was a real struggle. And the American Institute of Architects chapter had a building. We met up there. And we were busy telling Hartsville that if he didn't want the program, if we weren't going to back it, we weren't going to just knock our heads against the wall. I think he was involved, and he comes up with a lot of stuff. And he really got very curious. At least he put on an extra. I discovered that this was his birthday. So, I arranged for a cake to be bought. And he had a happy birthday in him on. He put it on the table, and here comes his cake. And it took all the steam out of it. And I've often thought that cake says it saved you than the middle book. He was a remarkable guy for real.
Yeah, I've been reading a lot about him, and I've gone through his papers better. Anyway, he's been quite a leader, actually.
He had, his watchword was, always do good to your friends, never good. Be good for your enemies. You can make enemies of your friends, and you never make friends of your enemies. Boy, he went right down my mind. He would make new friends, and he'd make new enemies, but they had to be one or the other before he knew how he'd treat them. His other great remark was when Roy Rogers brought his horse up the stairs in the City Hall into his office. Of course, he looks at the horse and says, the rest of the first time I hold a horse has ever been in this office.